Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about blind professional musicians. And in particular, there's one blind professional musician named Ross, who we interviewed extensively, and we captured so much wonderful material that it's actually going to carry over into another show on another topic. But most of today's show is going to be interviews with Ross, talking about how he manages to be a professional musician and music producer and run a music production studio. And the final piece of this show is going to be Ross's summary of how he created the singing Samantha that you may remember from a few weeks ago. But first, to our tip of the week. This week's tip is that you can use the internet to network with other blind people who share your interests. And this is actually how Pete met Ross in the first place. Since there aren't that many people with vision loss, you might have a hard time finding another one near you who's knowledgeable about a specific interest of yours, unless you happen to live in a pretty big city. Well, the internet has shrunk the world to the size of your desk, and it can be a very easy way to connect with other people who share your interests.
Well, and that's been a very good connection point for me, as you say, because, you know, living even in Rochester, which is a moderately sized town, there just aren't that many blind folks around or blind professionals in similar situations and or with similar interests. And as you said, I've met a number of folks through the internet. For example, Ross was one of those people. I was a member of this, well, I still am a member of this distribution list that's hosted on the net for blind musicians, and it's called MIDI Mag. If you want to find out more about it, it's www.midimag.org. That's MIDIMAG.ORG. And I've gotten lots of assistance from people. If I have a question, there's usually someone who responds pretty quickly within a day or so that'll have some idea of either how to do something musically, which I couldn't do, or how to use JAWS or some assistive technology, what pieces of equipment might be easier to use than others. I've met another person named Brian who saw me interacting on this MIDI Mag list and knew that I had some particular equipment he was having trouble setting up without seeing the equipment and wondered how to use it with JAWS and how I dealt with these particular pieces of equipment. And we interacted via Skype to actually set up his equipment real time. So that wound up fruitful. I've also become acquainted with a number of people in terms of script development for a number of programs that I either beta test or I help write scripts for. For instance, some of the music software scripts for JAWS, using it with Sonar, which is a musical editing program. So there's lots of interactions like that I've made that have been very fruitful. And, you know, of course, I can't know everything, and neither can anybody else. And so if we trade this information back and forth, it can be a very useful interaction.
And I think among you, you probably have the answers to pretty much any question anybody's come up with.
Generally, between the number of people you can interact with, you can generally run the answer to these questions down. And the interesting thing is, you talk about, you know, the internet making the world a small place. This person, Ross, actually lives in Australia, which is as far away from Rochester as you can get just about.
Turning now to our more or less low-tech item, we'll be talking about being a blind musician. For this segment, we interviewed Ross, who is not only a professional piano and accordion player, but is also a professional music producer.
Maybe you can tell our listeners what the state of your vision is.
Yes, well, I'm totally blind. I went blind when I was 8 years old, which is some time ago now. And I had a thing called a detached retina. I think it might have come from my father. He had a similar disease, and I spent about a year in hospital. But those days, they couldn't do much about it. That was, you know, quite a while ago. But these days, because they've got new technology, they can deal with things like that. So,
right.
You had both retinas detached at the same time?
Over a period of about a year. Well, the one started and the other one about a year later.
So I guess you know Braille and you learned that from when you were young?
Yes. Yeah, I went to the school for blind when I was about eight or 9 years old. Yeah, we learned Braille there. We used to use the old Stainsby machine, if anybody knows them. And then there was, I remember the very big day when the Perkins first arrived. You know, it was a big breakthrough for us, and this great new machine turned up. And...
Is it, you're talking about the Perkins Breller?
Yes.
And so what is it you do now?
I started doing piano at the School for Blind. We all learned piano there, and I went into a career with playing music, and then I set up a recording studio. That was 1975. So I basically operated the studio for 25 years until 2000. So that was my main occupation, running a studio and producing albums for people, and also, you know, kept playing, you know, along through all that as well, kept playing the piano.
Wow. So how did you learn the piano? Did you read Braille music, or did you learn by ear?
No, we started with Braille music. We had the old bar after bar method. It was like you'd first read the left hand and then the right hand. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be written after each other for the first bar, and then same for the second bar. And so we started with that. I started working things out by ear later on. I was about 12 or 13. I remember I was working out Beatles songs on the piano, much to my father's chagrin.
They don't like that when you're young somehow, right?
No, that's right.
Yeah, they prefer you play Chopin.
That's it.
So you said you ran your studio until 2000. Does that mean you stopped running the studio?
Yeah, I sold it in 2000 and I moved out of Sydney, mainly because it got very difficult to run the studio, because in the 90s period, they started bringing out a lot of these cheap multi-track recorders like the Tascams and the Fostecs. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people were setting up little home studios, and then they were hiring themselves out. So they had a very cheap form of competition for your studio, because my studio was a full-on 24-track facility, and but a lot of these other cheap ones were coming out. And plus also the computers were coming out then, you know, with music programs. And so there was a lot of competition in the studio market. People would be hiring themselves out at, say, half what I was charging, or even less.
Wow.
So it became difficult. So I got to the point where I thought, I managed to find a buyer and sold it. And then I wanted to move out of Sydney just to a quieter life. So I moved to a place called Tamworth, which is about 500 k's northwest of Sydney. And up here, I've now switched to the computer recording now. So I've now, you know, do my recording at home now using a computer system.
So you do similar things now with computer tools rather than hardware and knobs and buttons and things like that.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, it's just the same kind of work, except these days I'm not actually running a studio per se. I'm just pick and choose what I do these days. I combine that with a bit of live playing around the town here. And I'm very keen on songwriting. It's one thing I've said all my life, I wanted to have a go at songwriting, but I never did. So the last couple of years I'm delving into that now.
Oh, that's fun.
So what instrument do you play now?
Piano, and also the piano accordion. I really enjoy playing the accordion. Like, it's a very expressive instrument, you know, if you use it the right way. I mean, accordion is the butt of quite a few jokes, you know, like the banjo.
Oh, yeah.
But I enjoy it.
Seeing as this show is basically geared towards people with vision problems, let me ask, what kind of impact have you noticed your visual loss having on your musical career, if any?
I don't know. That's a sort of a moot point. I suppose you could say that it helps you focus more on your hearing. So, you know, you hear better. And, well, I mean, I've got very good ears. I can work out, you know, things by ear. Then again, I know other blind people who are hopeless at music. So I don't know. You can't sort of generalize really about making your hearing more intense, you know, but I suppose for some people it, you know, it does focus you more, I guess, on the music.
So Pete, when you were a kid, you could see a little better when they had you playing classical music. You read most of that music with your eyes, right?
Yeah, it was quite a bit of a pain. Although I did see a little bit better, I used to have to hold the music just a couple of inches from my nose. So I really had a difficult time playing and reading the music at the same time. So I'd more or less have to memorize a measure at a time, sort of like Ross has to do with, he described reading Braille music a measure at a time and then playing it. And by the time I memorized the piece, I was kind of sick of it. And of course, that was the time when you really knew the piece well enough to start making real music out of it. Later in life, I found that jazz was a lot easier and more flexible medium for me to do my musical activities in, and that way it was mainly what you could hear and what arrangements you could put together yourself.
So you pick out the new tunes mostly by ear?
I do pick them up by ear because, you know, by this time I know a fair amount about harmonies and chords and melodies and stuff. But I also use, we talked about in a previous show, a program called Band in a Box, which is a software program that will play back music to you a note at a time, a chord at a time. It'll allow you to enter chords and test out different arrangements. And you can find lots of particularly jazz tunes and popular tunes in a Band in a Box format on the web. So I normally look for those on the web, download those. Again, I can learn them just piece by piece that way and actually play along with the tune. Well, and once I have the tune in my head and I have an idea of how the chord should be sketched out, it's pretty easy for me to put together my own arrangement and make it sound the way I want to and start to put in some chord substitutions and make the tunes really my own.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
Okay, this week's focus topic is on tools that blind professional musicians and blind music producers use. So here's more of our interview with Ross.
Yeah, it was great to hear Ross say that blindness was sort of an aside. It was kind of a moot point, is the way he put it. But now you hear specifically how he does his job and gets around the vision problems.
Did you have any impact of your visual loss on running your studio or doing your current freelance audio production work?
Yes, it was very difficult to start the studio, mainly because everyone was telling me that I couldn't do it and it wouldn't work, which made me more determined, I suppose.
Right. Why is that not surprising, right?
I mainly bought just off-the-shelf equipment, but I got an old buzzer meter from the Science for the Blind people.
What is that?
It's like a buzzer. It's a... You put it across your track, audio track, and it buzzes to tell you what level you're recording at.
Oh, uh-huh. Sort of like an audible meter.
Oh, that's right, yeah, audible meter, yeah.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
So I got that from Science for the Blind. Mm-hmm. Well, that was really the only specialized bit of gear that I used. The rest of it was just all off-the-shelf equipment that anyone would buy. But I guess it had, some customers might be put off by the fact you were blind, I suppose, and wondering how you could do the work. And
right.
But then others seemed to not mind. But after a while, I just built up a reputation for myself, you know, because I was there for 25 years and I had the longest running independent studio in Sydney when I sold it in 2000.
Wow. So, well, that's what counts in the end is your reputation and how well you do, right?
That's right, yeah. I don't think being blind, you know, necessarily was a problem that way. I mean, it was a problem in other ways. It probably affected my... sometimes your view of yourself, sometimes you can be a bit harsh on yourself, you know, mm-hmm. when you're blind, mm-hmm. and you can judge yourself too hard.
Right, right.
About things that you can't do this and you can't do that, or this has got to be more complicated and all this sort of stuff. But you just have to learn to live with that because that's just how it is. When you're a blind person, you've just got to find different ways of solving a problem.
Right. Well, that's what we're always telling people on the show is, there are many ways to skin a cat. Sometimes half the problem is just knowing that something can be done and then finding your own way to do it, I think.
Yeah, that's right, I think. Yeah, you're just finding your own particular solution for it, yeah.
Right, right. I think also the people that tend to judge themselves more harshly are the ones that are, you know, they see the difference between where they want to be and where they are, and they tend to be the better people in the end because you're never satisfied, right?
Well, that's right, yeah. I've always been very driven all my life. Even now, as I say, I want to have a go at songwriting, and there's still things I want to achieve and want to try. Even though I'm 61, I'm certainly not feeling like I'm retiring or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could contrast being a blind studio producer in the days in the 70s when things were mostly hardware versus now when things are mostly computer run.
No, certainly a lot more accessible in the old hardware days.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, the hardware didn't give you the kind of amenity that you have now with software. The software gives you so many more great features to work with. Like in the old days, when you're doing a mix, you'd have to set up on the mixing console and you'd have like maybe 30 channels on the desk and have to set up levels for your send effects, patch in your effects and all that kind of thing. And then you'd do the mix and then... if the person wanted to do the mix again, remix it later, you'd have to go and reconfigure that whole setup on the desk, which was just a nightmare.
Oh, and all these knobs and buttons and switches.
You had to take note, you know, on a brown note of all the positions where they were at.
Right.
And your fader levels and all this. But, of course, these days with the computer, well, that's all just saved in memory.
Right.
So you just simply, you know, load up the song tomorrow and it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one incredible aspect. But I think the computer side of things, you know, now, let's say in 2011, it's getting a lot better for us, you know, with the progress on the PC, but also all this Mac stuff coming out now. So it's getting to a stage where maybe the access now is as good as I had back in my hardware days, you know, but that's taken 10 or 15 years, I suppose, to get to that point now where we're at with the computers, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the other question is, I mean, you were trained on hardware, and let alone being blind, you made the transition to working things on a computer. That had to be a double transition in some sense.
That's right, yeah, and I've always had an aversion to computers. You know, I don't like having to learn them. You know, I just want to turn the computer on and play the piano.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to know about uploads and downloads and configurations and installs and uninstalls, all that kind of stuff.
Right,
because
right.
I like to keep away from it because I just like to keep my head full of music. You know, I'm a musician and I like to keep my focus on music and playing and writing and audio. But I don't want to – some of the guys on MIDI-MAG, I mean, they get right into all this computer stuff and,
right.
You know, good on them for that. But, I mean, I don't want to know about it, you know. But unfortunately, you have to learn something about it.
So did you just self-teach yourself in the computer arena?
Yeah, but I had some good friends help me. There's a friend of mine, Andrew Downey in Sydney. He's a blind fellow, and his job is to teach technology and adaptive technology to students.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew and I have been friends for about 50 years, you know, from our school days. And, you know, he's been a great help to me because he's right into all this sort of technology stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm talking to you now on Skype. Well, this is the first time I've used Skype.
Yeah.
And Andrew helped me set it up, but I don't want to know all about that. You know, you install it, and you got this and that and this and that. I just want to turn it on and push the button and talk.
Right, right. Well, as most people do, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I've got some good friends with Andrew and another fellow, Matthew. He's my computer programmer.
Oh, that helps.
And then I have another person, actually, that I sometimes hire them to come down. I just pay them an hourly rate to come and help me with things because that's just the way I'd rather be. I don't want to get into learning it myself. You know, I want to keep my focus on music. And So music is what I'm good at. Computer side of things, I just learn what I have to, you know, get friends and others to, you know, help me do things.
So that was great, you know, hearing how he runs his studio and everything. And what a great positive attitude. But we thought we'd clarify a couple of things that Ross mentioned.
Yeah,
he mentioned NVDA, that's a free screen reader that we discussed in show 1114. And that's a great way to make his product more portable to people. You know, they don't have to have whatever particular commercial screen reader. So NVDA is available at www.nvda-project.org.
He also talked about control surfaces, and for non-musicians, you may not know what that is. What it essentially is a hardware device that hooks up to your computer, and it has real knobs and faders and buttons, and rather than controlling all the parameters of your audio with software graphics and labels on your computer, you can actually use the control surface to change these parameters. In fact, many sighted people use control surfaces also because it makes it a lot easier to control these parameters and set them the way you want.
In fact, I'd never heard of one until a couple of weeks after we'd bought ours. But Pete uses it all the time and makes him a much happier camper. He talked about MIDI-MAG that Pete mentioned earlier, a distribution list for blind musicians where they can communicate with each other at www.midimag.org.
And that's an extremely useful resource for people who play music, who are into computer music, who do different parts of audio production and things like that.
And then he also mentioned that he had bought his audio meter from a company called Science Products for the Blind. Well, they don't exist anymore. They've been taken over by CapTech, and that's www.capetek.net. But they were smart enough to retain the old name on a separate web address that'll get you to the same place, and that's scienceproducts.org. Or you can call them at area code 800-888-7400. So now here's a quick description of some of the specialized tools that Ross uses, and he will be referring back to that in the description of how he created the Singing Samantha.
You know, especially concerned about the accessibility, how did you choose one program over another? So you use Cubase for your stuff as opposed to Sonar or, you know, the numerous other programs around.
Yeah, well, Cubase was a very difficult choice when I started with that because it was very inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
And but I purchased a control surface for it called a Houston,
mm-hmm.
Which made a very big difference. And then I was using Window Eyes. And then We just did a few other workarounds. In the early days, some of the tasks I couldn't do in Cubase, so I would open up the file in SoundForge, mm-hmm. and I would do the work on there on the file because I couldn't access it in Cubase, and then I'd save the file and then reopen it in Cubase and just continue working with the project.
Ah.
So it was a bit of a hit and miss in the early days, but I chose Cubase because everyone in Sydney was using it, and well, I still believe it's the best music production software on the PC.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of stuck with it. But then over the last 3-4 years, I've had a friend of mine, Matthew, writing an access package for it, and we've now got that to a stage where it's at a really high level of access into Cubase, and so it's really a breeze to use these days compared to, you know.
That's really neat. Uh-huh.
You said you used to use WindowWise. Does that mean you switched to JAWS, or are you still using WindowWise?
I still use WindowWise, but actually in Cubase, our package, we're using NVDA.
Oh.
Because we can write our macros to work in exactly with NVDA and use some of the plugins in NVDA to sort of give us a real tight integration between the two. And the idea for that also was one day we were thinking we might try and make these scripts available so that other blind people can use Cubase. And I thought if we incorporate it with NVDA, well, then that can be supplied with the package so that it doesn't matter whether the person's a JAWS user or a WindowWise user, they can just use that on their general computing and then they could just use NVDA on our package if they're using Cubase, so it makes it more portable.
So let's hear what you can do with some of these tools.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you're near me. Funny, but when you're near me, I'm in the mood for love.
And that is Samantha, who does the synthesized voice announcement of the intros to our show. And let's see how that was put to music.
Hi there, Pete, and hi there, Nancy. This is Ross speaking to you from Tamworth in Australia. And today I'm talking about creating a vocal from the Samantha voice that Pete sent me. Just to let you know what equipment I'm using here, the Cubase music production program, which is multi-track audio and MIDI. It's the most widely used music production software in the world on the PC, but unfortunately it has been inaccessible for us to use. But I'm now developing an access package for it along with a computer friend of mine, Matthew. So while I'm doing this, sometimes you'll hear me say win key period or win key L or win key P. Now, they're the commands that we've worked out for our access package to do various jobs. As well as that, I'm using a CC121, which is a control surface made by Cubase. It's a metal box around about 9 inches by 8 inches, and it connects to the computer via USB, and on it has knobs and buttons and also one motorized fader. So I'm using that to actually control quite a few of the functions in Cubase. The vocalizing we do today, I'm using a plugin called Harmony Engine, made by Antares. And then my voice recording, I'm actually recording into the BookPort Plus using its internal microphone. It's not too bad recording, actually, considering it's a multifunction device. It's quite good. So now I'll start with Pete sent me a piano track, which was like this. And then he also sent me a voice track, which was Samantha.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you're near me.
So if we put those together.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you're near me.
So you'll notice there that the voice is in the right time, but it's actually the phrase is very rushed. She's actually speaking a lot faster than the melody on the piano, so I've got to go to track five. So what I've got to do is time stretch that voice. So I'll do win key H to highlight the track, win key period for time stretch. Process, I'll enter on that. Now while Cubase presses that, I'll just stop the recording and start again just to save a bit of time. So there we now have Samantha coming in with the piano and also singing in the right timing, melody-wise. So then I go through and do all the other phrases. And then after that's done, I then export that and make a new file out of it. And I import that onto track 6. And then on track 6, I insert the Harmony Engine. So now I'm playing to the piano and the voice on track 6 with the Harmony Engine inserted. And you'll hear no voice. And the reason for that is because I haven't played any MIDI notes in yet to trigger that. So I've got my MIDI keyboard here. So I'll jump to track 12, which is MIDI 4. And then I just enable record on that. I can push the record button on the CC121. And then I can hold a light probe over that. You can hear that noise there, and that's picking up the light. Now, if I play this and I put it in record, and I'll just play any old notes on the piano for now.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you hear me.
So, what I was playing on the piano there, the harmony engine was using the Samantha as the source vocal, and then my MIDI notes were generating the tune from that source. So, this time we'll do it again, and this time I'll try and play it properly. So I hit play and then record.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you're hearing.
Okay, I play that, just the voice only now.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because...
So, you know, you'll hear there on the word simply, the S is very pronounced. Now, what we've got there is a bit of a tracking error. So what I'll do now is I'll turn up the original voice on track 5 just to give me a reference.
I'm in the mood for love.
And I'll go to track 6. We're going to create a range here, so we shall go back to there. Now if I alt space to play that. So now what I'll do is lower that. So I'll do Win key L for the gain, and if I'm at minus 16 there, so that'll do. So we'll go back and process that. So what I've done now, I've lowered the volume of that S by about 16 dB on the source vocal. So we have a listen now.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you're...
So you'll hear there now that the S is a lot better there. Now, I just want to show you one other thing. If I jump to this line here, I'll just solo the voice.
I'm in the mood for love.
So you'll hear on the last word there, love, she's got a vibrato. I'm in the mood for love. And it's possible to add that vibrato within the harmony engine, and it just gives it a bit more realism. Now, I'll play you a short piece of something else I'm doing for a singer at the moment. He's doing the old song, The Love Boat, and I had a lady singer come in and just sing the middle harmony, and she did that twice, so we had like a double track, and then I used Harmony Engine to generate the high harmony and a low harmony, so we finished up with 3 harmonies with a total of 6 voices. So I'll play that for you now, just to give an idea of the Harmony Engine plugin working with a musical source. Thanks very much, Pete and Nancy. Thanks for the chance to do this work for you. And we'll catch you again.
I'm in the mood for love.
And many thanks again to Ross McGregor from Tamworth, Australia. We really appreciate your help.
Thanks a lot, Ross.
So that's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about working. So if you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at area code 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.